This is the Extra Hot Grape Podcast, episode 46 for the week of October 13th, 2014. I am Security Chief and Ringmaster David T. Cole, and I'm here with conjoined twins Sarah D. Bunting and Tara Ariano.
Two heads are better than
none.
That's what she said.
And bearded male lady Joe Reed.
Do I shock you?
Welcome, everybody. Before we get going with the episode proper, a little site business. A reminder that the phrase that pays is still in effect, and no one guessed it last week, so it's still open for your guesses on the comments thread. Game Time last week had a couple mistakes. John Hamm indeed not in Seinfeld ever, and James Spader not on Friends. But after all those were tallied up, it did not affect the outcome. So, Tara, you still won. Closing call for submissions. We have a No Neck special coming to you. We have a Canon special coming to you. We have a Program Parole Board special coming at you in the coming weeks. So we
have TV Cop.
Oh, yeah, and TV Cop. So we're all good. You don't need to submit anything right now. But I think in 2015, we will try to do a proper all I am not a crackpot episode because we are due for one of those.
I think. Come up with your crackpot theories, everybody.
Yes. All right. So let's get to it. Welcome back, Joe Reed. Yay!
Hey, Joe Reed! I'm so happy to be back.
Today, we are talking, our lead topic is American Horror Story, not American Hooray Story, as I typed, almost typed in Twitter today, and I started thinking about what that show would be.
And
I might write that up, because I got pretty far into it, and it wouldn't fit 140 characters, so look forward to that. But what do we got? Season four, right?
Season four.
We're at the circus, we're under the big top.
Yep.
First impressions?
I'm into it.
Yeah, I think it's tough to sort of separate how disappointing the end of last season was.
It really was.
Because I feel like last season also sort of started off on a strong note, if I'm recalling correctly.
I think I didn't get out of the beginning of last season.
Yeah.
Because once the voodoo came in, I was like, yeah, I ain't got time for that.
Yeah, so. Well, and that's one of those things where it just allows you to, it allows the writing to be flabbier than it needs to be. And there was just a lot of that really like irksome thing where nobody can die. And it's like, well, you're in an anthology show. That's the whole point, is that like everybody can die. That's what was so great about season one.
Yeah.
I thought was just like, oh my God. I mean, season two, I guess too. It was just like, wow, they just keep killing these people off. This is great. And, but so after that, I think coming into this, there's a little bit of a saturation point with American Horror Story with like, there's only so surprised I can be that something is going to be shockingly terrible or gross or like campy or over the top. But even within those constraints, like the Life on Mars scene with Jessica Lange was pretty, I was not expecting them to do that. So that was pretty cool. And like, I still respect this show's ability to give me something that I genuinely haven't seen on television and you can't see on television in other places. At least it, like you can see songs, but you're not going to see the combination of elements with like, you know, German expatriate singing mm-hmm. non-chronological song with a weird pun on her own surname. Like there's a lot of elements.
And at the same time, this very sort of Douglas Sirky set design, like I paused it several times to admire a cupcake.
It's gorgeous.
And then what happened later on in that scene was, you know, really not cupcakey
no
at all, but just the dresses, the color palette, that sort of like mid-century Everglades like sweet rot color scheme that they have going on is really cool. And I'm just so happy that Finn Wittrock is gonna be Finn Wittrocking my screen every week. I fucking
He's
love
really
that guy
good, right?
Yeah, he was like the only happy in Death of a Salesman who ever registered at all with me. I've been talking about that performance since I saw it. And
he's an ABC daytime guy. I always got to root for those.
Oh, yeah?
Those he was on All My Children during the last few seasons.
Just to place him in the show. Who does he play
in
the
dandy.
Show?
He's the dandy.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So
that scene. And can we talk about the second episode?
Yeah, we can talk about it. I mean, Dave, are you going to put it up tonight? We're recording this on Wednesday.
Let's just be safe, shall we?
Sure.
Spoilers aho, fun ahoy, for episode 2 and beyond.
Yeah, there's a scene in the second episode where it's at home with him and his mother, who's Frances Conroy, where he's drinking out of this like crystal goblet with a rubber nipple on it.
Yeah. Normal which stuff. Is just, I assume this is how people dine in Florida all the time. Is that not correct?
Right, right. Yeah, I feel like at least certain parts of Florida for sure.
Mm-hmm. It's the Everglades.
Yeah. But it's like,
don't email me.
It's that kind of thing about the show where it's just like, you know, yeah, we're going to like, we've already well established what type of character this is. But just to go that extra crazy ass weird mile, we're going to throw a rubber nipple on his drinking glass.
I would like to say right now, I am not a crackpot, but I think that horse in his playroom was probably killed by him and then stuffed by his mom, Izzy.
It's like, killed by being stuffed. Like, yes, yeah, that was the cause of death.
It's like, I want it. And she's like, all right, dear.
Just before we close out episode 2 spoilers, can we talk a bit about just the tone of the mother bringing the Twisty the Clown back to the house,
yeah,
and how matter of fact the whole thing was and how unquestioning everybody was about, oh, I don't know, the face on top of a face and things like that. Does that add to the appeal of the show or detract you from the story as it's going on?
I mean, that was where, obviously with a show like this, you kind of have to suspend your disbelief mm-hmm. going into it. But even that, yeah, I was like, I don't know about this. Like, who pulls over, sees that face, and is like, yes, come into my home?
You don't even need to see the face. You just need to see him from behind and how dirty he is.
The trudging.
Just keep on driving.
Yeah.
Well, it's more of a problem because they're trying to do the dual tone thing where the freak mm-hmm. show is sort right. of one thing and the clown stuff is another. Mm-hmm. And like with the stuff in the first episode where like that scene that they lifted wholesale from Zodiac, and good for them too, because that's the
and
best part of that movie.
Thank you. I'm yep. so glad that you are on to talk about this, because I was like, is anyone else going to notice that it was like,
yep,
it was exactly like it was
and
really
clipped out with scissors.
Plus,
it was amazing.
Isn't that John Carroll Lynch as the scary clown?
Yes.
Wasn't he like the person that we're supposed to think at the end of Zodiac, spoiler
yep.
alert, is the killer?
Exactly. Exactly.
I feel like I don't need to do a spoiler alert on a movie that's like almost 10 years old.
We're already
right?
in spoiler
okay, right, right.
zone, so we don't want to nest them because it gets too
confusing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then it's a Matrix 2 kind of a thing, and we don't need to deal
well,
with
there's
that.
A certain appeal to American Horror Story in that, you know, nobody seems to be scared of just throwing shit at the wall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And whether it sticks or not with you, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
I don't think the creators really care. And there's something to be said about, you know, that drive, that, you know, a vision.
Yeah.
And sometimes it clicks with me, sometimes it doesn't. And just in that one instance, for some reason, the mother pulling up to the clown on the highway, the rural
yeah.
highway, and asking
yeah.
it back, just sort of like, well, maybe that was one step too far for David T. Cole.
Well, the
believability.
The other thing that bugged me about episode 2 was when the cops show up and then to question them about, you know, the incidents of episode 1, and then the freaks have all got. Sorry, but it's a freak show. They've all got chips on their shoulder about, like, they just think we're murderers. Like, you are murderers. Like, you can't use the whole, you know, X-Men, like, we're unfairly marginalized from society. Because, like, yes, you are. But also, in addition to that, the girls did murder their mother. And you did murder a cop. So that whole justification kind of fell apart for me.
To clarify, not actual chips on their shoulders.
Not actual chips on their actual
most
shoulders.
Shows you would not have
the
to
ones
make
who
that
have shoulders, that is.
Can I close out this episode 2 spoiler?
Sure.
American Horror Story Freak Show episode 2 spoilers.
Okay, back to episode 1.
Yep.
Yes.
I loved that. I thought the musical number was super fun, and I like the anachronistic music. Apparently,
yeah.
it's going to be a running theme, and who cares? Like, with a show like this, I don't think anyone is watching it looking for strict historical accuracy of the period.
Yeah, totally.
Did anyone read that story in Vulture that was like how speculating about how all of the seasons might be connected?
Through Pepper,
but there also like are other surnames, I guess, that get
no,
repeated that I never noticed because they're really generic, like Goodman and stuff.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting.
I'll link
that
it in the
show
notes.
That kind of stuff is like up my alley. So
I would
definitely read that.
What happens if Jessica Lange doesn't come to season 5? Like, she's saying she won't.
She will.
She will.
But I also feel beep, like you beep, could beep. You could bump up Angela Bassett and you would still be fine.
Yeah.
Like, I think right now, like, with the, adding Angela Bassett and Kathy Bates last season was actually really smart, because now all of a sudden you have people in the repertory company who could take on that leading sort of grand dam kind of a thing.
I mean, so could Frances Conroy. She was kind of better than Jessica Lange in season 3.
But hear me out. What if they do this?
So too.
And the, I think this is kind of the crazy kind of thing that they might try. Helen Mirren.
Do you think she'd
consider
she would
it too, which is why she's the shit.
Yeah,
it's true.
But can she do a Baltimore accent like Kathy Bates? Oh my god.
That was something else.
I actually looked it up. I was like, wait, she's from Tennessee? Because that was like,
yeah,
I could smell crab. It was awesome.
I enjoyed the thing with the Baltimore accent is you need a good minute and a half to let it like process through your brain before you can even hear it correctly.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
And it's like 12 degrees tilted over and you're like, is that Philly? Is that New Orleans? It's where is that?
Such an ugly accent.
English because, yeah.
Yeah, it really
is. It was really something.
It hurts me.
Was there any part that anybody thought was kind of scary beyond the part that they ripped out from Zodiac and the clown chasing the woman? That POV GoPro camera kind of trailing shot was great. It's about time we had fast zombie clown instead of the slow
stalking. 28 days later zombie clown.
I mean, I almost wish that they hadn't revealed Sarah Paulson's character's deal, because I feel like that would have been a much cooler reveal. Because the way they staged it when we see Elsa coming to see Dot and Bette in the hospital, like, it's they shoot it very carefully, like, through the, you know, the shades around the bed and stuff.
Yeah.
If I hadn't known that she was going to be conjoined twins, that would have been much more awesome. But I guess in this day and age, you can't. You can't not reveal that.
Oh, just in terms of, like, the marketing?
Yeah, if it wasn't already known that that's what she was playing.
Yeah, that's true.
Anyway.
Yeah, but I guess they had to... It was like, we can try to keep it a secret and totally fail.
Right.
Or we can just say that's what it is and try to keep other things a secret.
Yeah. I mean, that wasn't scary per se, but it was suspenseful, and it would have been more so if we didn't already know.
Speaking of things I didn't care for, the weirdly long scene of the video showing the candy stripers time at the freak show just kind of felt like it went on and on for way longer than it needed to. Like, somebody
like, we get it.
Yeah.
Somebody. Depraved sexual acts, you know,
on a street.
Depraved sexual acts, though, that like ended up being just like, oh, there's somebody's bum. Like,
yeah. Or it really was the communal part. And then she has this giant opium pipe and she lives content. Like, I don't know. Does anyone else watch the credits of this show every time and, like, not fast forward through them to sort of build mood? Am I the only one who does that?
Nope,
oh,
I do too.
Oh, like the credit sequence.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I'll watch it. Because it freaks me out and it puts me in the right mindset, I think, for the show.
Because we all enjoy a good leg dick.
What?
Leg dick. There's one. There's one.
There's a figure that's like a girl, but with a dick. Third leg where a penis or whatever would be.
Dick.
Yep.
And apparently
mostly,
that might be in the show.
There's some like toy that reminds me of, you know, that creature in the original Toy Story that's under Sid's bed.
Yes.
That's like the doll head on the spider erector set thing.
Yes.
It creeps me to this day. Like, that is a kid's movie. That little character ends up being a good guy, and I still am like, like, I don't know, something about doll heads.
Yeah.
Not well, into it.
This season, it's, and the stop motionness also makes it like feel extra, you know, unworldly or otherworldly,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
Like, it's very unsettling how jittery it is. Yeah.
Yeah. This is not episode 2 and beyond spoiler, but I was complaining about how much table setting they seem to be doing in this season and that I kind of wanted them to get to the Big Top Factory already. And I was, and again, not spoilers, but I was finding some artwork for the podcast graphic today. And there's a lot of characters we haven't even seen yet. So
that's always the case though.
Yeah. I felt like the other seasons hit the ground running a little quicker than this one is. I don't necessarily mind it. And it's kind of a complaint you make in the moment. And then perhaps looking back at the end of the season, you know, you'll be more forgiving of it. But I thought that they could have got to the meat of the matter quicker, the strong man and his wife's introduction seemed to like kind of meander all over the place for me. And I guess I was sort of also expecting some scary bits, some horror, and I didn't really think that was much of a thing in the first couple episodes.
I don't know, that the clown murder scene is pretty upsetting.
It is, but that was
the clown
the
did
only...
it for me, I have to say.
He mm-hmm. is creepy, and I love that Norm from Fargo is playing him. Because every time he's on screen, he's like, oh, better, gotta have a breakfast.
Eat a breakfast.
Twisty. Yeah.
You're Mallard.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
But, we'll see. I'll see, but I just kind of wanted more horror, yeah. I guess.
Let me ask you this, Dave, since we, when we were on vacation recently, you watched all of season 1 and 2
oh, yeah.
very quickly.
Well, yeah, so my introduction to the series was 3, 1, 2, and now this one.
Oh, interesting.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And so how would you say this one so far stacks up compared to the other ones? I never asked you which season you liked the best.
You know, here's my problem with each season's progress is that I find like at the 3/5 mark, something happens that's almost like a reset. And it's sort of like, is like, what? And it's like they need to, like, I feel like the series as a whole would be stronger if they did less episodes and more seasons. Like if they did... Like, what is it?
Like 13? 9 episodes.
Yeah, but they did like 8, you know, if they did a strong 8.
Like a True Detective style.
Yeah, and rather than whatever they're doing, 12 or 13.
Yep.
Because like when Arden dies in the second one, spoiler, like that seemed to be a reset moment. And then at the same time, Jude goes bonkers, like they admit her and then she kind of goes crazy. And that seemed like such a tonal shift and such a, like a character situation reset all at once that it kind of felt like it was almost either... a second season of the same show
when
or
we were
a different show.
Watching it again, I forgot how early on What's-His-Face's two wives are living together. Like it's happened sooner than recalled.
So generally,
so that's another thing to your point.
So I find that like I usually get frustrated with the seasons in the you know the back nine. But I would say as far as the ones I like the most, I definitely think the second one was the most enjoyable. Despite
that's my favorite.
That's my favorite
that
too.
Weird reset moment. I didn't mind the third one again until near the end, and I thought they just sort of ran out of ways to finish character stories, like the Fleetwood Mac
Stevie
Witch.
Nicks. Oh,
no,
Misty.
Thank you. Like her ending was not deserved. Like whether or not she survived, it was such like a throwaway moment that didn't really have a. Like they were building her up in the season so much, and there was just like this. They
Here's
just
where they went
her.
Wrong with that, though, is they set up a story where only one could prevail.
Yes,
and so you had to have four other stories end in disaster.
Yeah,
and like there was only one way that it was the same way for all of those to end. Is that just and. Rather than having something where like you could find all sorts of different ways for all of your many characters to end up, they all had to end up losing.
Well, the other problem with that storyline was that they established rules very clearly, very early on of like what a Supreme is. And then by the end of the season, it was like, oh yeah, she can totally have been blind. That doesn't violate the glowing good health aspect that we said in episode 1.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, yeah, Dave, you make a good point because I think there's also... There's always like that one performance in each season that you're like
Dylan McDermott.
Yeah. That you're like, I can do 8 or 9 of this, but not 12 or 13.
Yeah.
And last year, I mean, season 3, I just like it was one too many things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Kathy Bates's performance, I did not like. I felt Jessica Lange was kind of phoning it in. And it was just like, well, here's, you know, New Orleans TM, according to TV and movies, and I don't care. Like, it's one of my least favorite things.
Yeah.
Having never been to the city, I'm sure it's great. I look forward to eating my way through it one day. That's what she said. But yeah, like on TV, sometimes I just really cannot. But yeah, there's always that one performance, and I have a feeling this time it is going to be Finn Wittrock, where it's going to be like episode 9, and I'm going to be like, dude. Like, I know this is the role, but
he's up on the gas.
Low tone.
I mean,
medium tone.
Yeah, I don't know any spoilers at all, but I would say he is not likely. He doesn't feel like he's going to make it to the end, to me.
I feel like,
based on events of episode 2, which I will not spoil. Yeah, but lots of people are main cast.
Yeah.
they get killed before the end.
Duffman says a lot of things.
All right. Shall we leave it there for American Horror Story?
Yeah.
All right. Okay, it's time to go around the dial. Tara, what's your show this week?
First of all, I just want to give everybody a warning that what I'm about to say is disgusting. I'm going to describe it in detail, and it might gross you out, like, in a major way. So if you have a sensitive stomach, I'm not even kidding, you should fast forward this part.
Neat.
Extreme what did Chelsea Handler do? I don't understand.
She was terrible on Letterman last week, but that's not what I'm going to talk about. Extreme Cheapskates is back on TLC. Every year with these shows, you wonder, when are they going to run out of freaks to put in into these programs?
Shopping.
So far, they have not. And this year's crop seems to be especially gross, real gross. One guy we see explaining that he doesn't like to use his water heater, so instead he has a hot tub, which I feel like heating up a hot tub is more inefficient.
I wish you could see Joe's face
electricity wise. So obviously, if you've seen Extreme Cheapskates before, you know he bathes in this hot tub, he does his laundry in this hot tub. But in addition to that, this guy doesn't believe in using his microwave for the electricity savings, so we also see him put a Tupperware container of soup in the hot tub to heat it up, like just floating around on the surface. Not okay. And yet, that's not even the grossest thing that we've seen this season so far, because we also meet a flight attendant who I feel like we never totally see we see her in uniform probably because she's too cheap to buy clothes, but we see her name tag. I believe she works for Delta. And she...
Don't sue.
I said I believe. I'm not sure. She explains that apparently with the pillowcases on your airport pillows, on your airplane pillows, they throw away the pillowcases.
Yeah.
But she thinks that's wasteful. So what she does is gathers them up, boils them in a saucepan because that'll fix everything. And then I swear to God this is true because we see her do it. She cuts them up and uses them for coffee filters.
Oh, no.
It's not okay.
What's wrong with a paper towel? Haven't you ever seen a movie with a fraternity in it? Jesus Christ.
Yeah, she also has stolen...
Too cheap for TV. Sorry, my mistake.
She's also stolen a whole bunch of the actual pillows and sewn them together into a duvet, which she then uses as with a whole bunch of sewn together airport blankets as a duvet cover. Which is disgusting. But then the end of the episode is her and her fiance going to the unclaimed baggage center in Alabama, finding rings that have been found in someone's unclaimed baggage, and they get married at the unclaimed baggage center in clothes that they also bought there.
Aww.
Extreme Cheapskates is fucking crazy. It's crazier this season than ever before. Please watch it so that we can talk about it.
Wasn't there, was that part of the special that was like Extreme Cheapskates Find
Guide
Love?
To Love?
Guide to Love.
That was just a special at the beginning of the season, right. Which is like people's dumb cheapness in dating.
Right. But that concept was odious and gross. And just the few snippets I saw were like, ugh.
Yeah, because it's a lot of like, why would I take my girlfriend out when I could just cook her an egg on my engine block? I swear to God, that also happened.
Wait, back to the coffee filters thing.
Yep. Quiet, I can't hear the eggs.
Uh-huh, listening. Joe, go ahead, Joe.
So,
yep.
Rather than go through the whole rigmarole of that,
right?
Like, coffee is not an essential human need, right?
I mean,
like,
not to me.
Wouldn't it just save you a lot more money to just, like, go off a coffee?
I mean, that's what I would do. You know, I've made different choices in my life.
I'm not saying I'm going to write this woman a letter, but I might write this woman a letter.
You know what we should do? We should
watch these. Save even more.
We should watch. Yeah, exactly. We should be watching these shows and then like sort of doomsday prepper them, giving scores on how cheap they actually are. Because I think like you were saying, like the guy doesn't want to use his microwave. Why does he have a microwave?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly.
Why doesn't
that
he sell
my
it?
Thought as well.
That's like $40 you could probably get.
Yeah, I mean, there's another one where I tweeted about this one where the woman was like going to a salon. She was getting ready for a date night with her husband. So she goes to the salon and is like,
what the hell?
What if you just give me a weave with like hair from the floor of your salon? Not even joking. Like if you're going to a salon,
right.
If you're going to get waxed and you're like, what if I bring my own wax? Like this wax kit I have at home. That's not Your priorities are wrong. Yes. Exactly. That is an extravagance.
I've never had a weave in my life, and I'm doing pretty okay. I could be doing better if I had a weave, granted, but you won't hear me complaining.
Yeah, but an actual weave, not like a floor weave.
All right, Sarah, take it away.
Okay, Tara and Dave, take a break.
Okay.
Joe,
yes.
I thought we could do a little little fantasy draft of the Major League Baseball postseason's announcers
okay.
on Fox Sports and TBS.
It would help if I could find Fox Sports 1 on my cable system.
Yeah, it's like there is like a decimal point in the channel number. It's not good.
My cable box is like, really? Goes this far? Like, yeah.
Well, anyway, listeners, we have the following draftees available. Cal Ripken Jr., Tom Verducci, Harold Reynolds, Ron Darling, Ernie Johnson Jr., Buck Wad, Joe Buck, sorry. And then we each get a mystery announcer of our choice. It can be TV or radio. Picky, could you decide who's going first, please?
We will start with Sarah.
I just want to say before you start, I've heard of two of those people, so whatever.
Whoa.
Okay, well, maybe when The Simpsons does another softball episode, you'll be...
Oh, I deserve that.
Bam.
So hard.
Yeah, that was good.
I'm going to select Ron Darling first. He's very knowledgeable. He's one of the color guys for the TBS team. He's also the best guy in the Mets booth, so I hear a lot of him. And by the end of the season, I'm telling Keith and Gary to shut up kind of a lot, especially Keith. Stop talking about steak dinner and saying fundies. It's not appropriate for a family show. But I never tell Ron Darling to shut up, and he doesn't take himself too seriously and knows a lot about stuff. So Darling is my number one. Joe.
All right, wait, hang on, Joe.
Yes.
We got Joe and we got sports. So that means it's time for... It's Smooth Jolie Apollo's first draft pick.
I'm so glad you still have that. That's fantastic.
Oh, I got them all still, Joe.
I think I'm going to go with my first pick, Ernie Johnson, who is the play-by-play guy for the TBS booth. It's sort of easier for the play-by-play guy to not annoy you because he's sort of the nuts and bolts kind of guy. He can get away with just sort of telling you exactly what's happening, and he doesn't have to fill the air with whatever inane kind of ramblings. He doesn't get the extra points of, like, reacting to anybody particularly stupid, because he does have Ron Darling there, who's pretty good. So, like, he could probably get a few more bonus points if he was with somebody worse.
That's true.
You know what I mean?
He also has a wonderful, like, just booming, full voice.
That's what I was also
He's like
say.
The human bell.
He's
and then
got
you
a
see him,
voice.
And it totally doesn't match. It's kind of interesting.
He looks super, yeah, it's that quintessential sort of, like, nerdy... Nerdy in the streets. And
also the last person under the age of 65 still named Ernie.
Yes.
Pretty
also
amazing.
True. Yeah, he's a good steady presence. And I feel like in an industry where me being a sportsy guy who doesn't has friends who are totally not, I find myself when other friends are in the same room and I'm watching sports, I feel so self-conscious about the announcers, particularly football. It's not as bad with baseball, but watching football with people who don't watch football, I almost want to just, like, mute the TV because the announcers are so consistently loud and obnoxious and annoying.
And clueless and embarrassing and just stating the obvious. And
yeah,
it's not good. Soccer. American commentators on soccer.
Yeah.
Even worse.
Anyway.
I think that's a solid first pick. My second pick, swimming a little upstream on this, I'm going to take Harold Reynolds, and here's why.
Whoa.
Yeah. Well, reason 1A. Nobody else can take it.
That's true.
1B, he can really wear a suit. And he actually, he can be really a moron. He can be that one that...
He,
like,
sounds so dumb.
Because I don't think he's super bright, but there is nobody who is more enthusiastic about his job and loves his job and says he loves his job all the time. Like,
yeah.
It's not like certain other people on this list who are just, like, over it, don't want to be there, should have improved after the departure of Tim McCarver and didn't.
Yeah.
Name rhymes with fuck. But yeah, I mean, he...
God, you hate that guy.
Yeah.
I really, actually, when it's football, I don't totally hate that guy, but I can't lie. I hope Joe picks him instead of leaving it for me. Might be able to learn, might be able to be brought, like, slowly towards sabermetrics if you, like, coat it in sugar and...
Drew him a very detailed map.
Like, put it in a nice package and be like, look, it's, you know, it's gutty.
Yeah.
Put
yeah.
it in a gutty package. That's what you need to do. So that is my second pick, is Harold Reynolds.
All right. So for my second pick, going back to what I said about Ernie Johnson, how he'd be even better to react to somebody wildly stupid, I'm using my wild card pick to bring Tim McCarver back into the game. Wow. Because then that solves two problems.
Controversial.
Right there.
Even yeah. I know that.
Yeah, oh. Nobody likes that guy. But that's the thing.
You broke the draft.
It was more fun. It was more fun to watch baseball when he was there. I'm just going to say, because he was consistently, even during the most boring game, you could at least find something dumb that McCarver said to
and
talk about.
The other thing is, 30 years ago, he was really good. He used to be the class in the Mets booth back in the day. So, all right, that's interesting.
that's different of, translation I, terrible
kind of don't want anyone else on this list, so I'm going to use my wild card pick for Vin Scully. No explanation necessary. Back over to you.
That's a good one.
He's the best.
That's
America's
very good
baseball
one.
Grandpa.
And so now you've got your play-by-play guy, so you don't have to worry about anybody else. Okay, I am, just to set the stage for everybody who doesn't have this handy list in front of them, I am now down to choosing either Joe Buck, the aforementioned worst, or who I'm going to pick, who is historically, for me, one of the all-time great players, incredibly boring people I've ever encountered in my entire life, Cal Ripken Jr. Holy shit, do I want to take a nap every time he starts talking.
And he almost never talks. That's the other thing, that if there's something to say, he just doesn't
talk. I was
talk.
Surprised to like, see him that's... on this list, because it was like, he's a commentator? It's like, oh, right, he actually is.
I'm not sure he knows that. Yeah, I'm not sure he knows when the light is
on. But it's consistent. He was a boring player. He was always very good, very great. But his whole like claim to fame is that he played the most games.
In
so
a row.
Like,
yeah.
Right. So it's like, congratulations, you stepped onto a field. Like, I know it's a great accomplishment. I stepped onto the field exactly zero times. But still.
His brother, meanwhile.
Your career isn't over yet.
Pretty good commentator and you, has Tara. A very famous baseball card incident that, like, that's what happens when you're the little bro, I guess.
What's his baseball card
incident? He had the, in his baseball card, you could see the word fuckface on the end of the bat. And they had to reissue the card.
I thought you were going to say like he had a boner showing or something like that. Okay.
Both are great.
But apparently, here's the best part.
Wait, that was his nickname. Wait, so, hang on. Sorry. I just need an explanation. The bat actually said fuckface on it?
Yeah, he was like, he had it like on his shoulder in the end of the knob. Sorry. That's what she said. Had fuckface written on it because that was his nickname. Was fuckface.
Wait, that was his nickname, not the bat's nickname?
Correct.
Wonderbat from
right.
And then there's little fuckface, and who knows what that
once
was
again,
referring to.
Back to my point. Yes. Okay. But anyway.
Oh my God.
All right. So now we're down to Verducci and Buckwad. Tom Verducci's hair has improved, but he is always trying to. I mean, he's always trying to be Roger Angel in every aspect of his life, and it's not working because he's trying too hard. But I guess I'll take Verducci. Mrs. Verducci, thank you for getting that what looked like a wig under control. I'm still not convinced it isn't, but at least it's not standing off his head like a proscenium arch that fell on him from the top of the stadium. It's really bad. I'm sorry. Oh, it's terrible. I will send WigCop a picture because
I was going to say, we're going to need a.
The statute of limitations never runs out on whatever that was.
We're going to need a picture for the show notes so people can know what you're talking about. Although your description is gorgeous.
Joe, do you have anything to add about Joe Buck while I attempt to compose myself?
I just sort of want to describe for the listeners. Like,
oh no, God. Sarah broke herself.
I'm sorry.
Oh my God.
Old gopher head strikes again.
This is fantastic.
Okay, I'm sorry. Please continue.
No, I was just going to say, for the people who don't know, sort of the perfect storm of terrible that is Joe Buck is he's the son of a legendary broadcaster with all the sort of weird little like best boy in the booth kind of entitlement that implies. He's a consummate company man to the point where at one point my most hated Joe Buck moment in football was when he was calling the one Packers Vikings game and Randy Moss scored a touchdown and then pantomimed mooning the crowd, at which point this was like weeks or not even weeks. This was like the season after the Janet Jackson thing or whatever, right? When everybody was very concerned about getting, you know, fined by the government.
Right.
So Joe Buck proceeded to go on for like 20 minutes about how that was appalling and we apologize and blah, 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 blah. Not realizing the man didn't actually pull down his pants. So
also, it's Fox. You air duets. calm down.
Yes. So like he's the company man to that degree, but to Sarah's point now, he's the company man who has stayed in the game too long and now he doesn't like it anymore. So now he's just sort of grumpy and like looks like he would rather be anywhere else.
And I thought it might help once McCarver retired, because I thought 75% of Buck's issue with baseball was McCarver, but it turns out it's 75% Freudian issues. Like, he doesn't want to be there. Yeah. He doesn't have to be there. Go just do football. You're fine with football.
Yeah.
Thus concludeth the draft.
That was exciting.
Yeah.
HBO is finally doing some sort of don't need cable system. And frankly, I'm against commoners having direct access to HBO.
I agree.
Joe. Wow.
So at the risk of sticking my head in the lion's mouth at this point, I do want to talk about Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which...
Oh, you're the one.
I was going to say, you're the only one here who's going to, so you might as well.
That's true. I think I realized last week as I was sort of looking at a full DVR, as I hadn't, you know those days where you come back and it's like, wow, I haven't really got a chance to watch TV in like 3 days. I have every show available to me now. And I picked Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. first. So... I think sort of that kind of told me something. I had stopped watching it last season very early, like maybe after two episodes for not huge.
That's where I stopped too. I
think. Us too.
And it didn't feel like any sort of big huffy reason. It was one of those sort of like utilitarian, like I haven't watched this thing in several weeks. And
yeah, you can only care about so many things. Yeah. And this is not going to be one of those
attrition
things.
Dictated.
See also Gotham. Sorry, Gotham.
Yeah. Yep. And then nobody else seemed to be enjoying it either. So like, I've become very social in my TV watching where it's just like, well, if nobody else is going to talk to me about this, I'm not going to watch it. But I'm also a really big fan of the Marvel movies, as you probably know. And I was curious to see how the show was going to incorporate the plot twists that the Captain America movie, gave last season. But again, it was one of those like, oh, all those episodes. So I didn't. I waited till the summer and a friend of mine who had kept watching the show sort of gave me the like, if you want to see if you like it again, like here are like the four episodes to watch to like this would be the sort of part of the season to watch. So I did. And I was intrigued enough to keep going through the rest of the season. I sort of banged out the rest of the season like days before the new season started. And like I'm entirely pleased to find out I'm really liking it. I think a lot of the specific problems that I had with it in the first season had been addressed and sort of, if not entirely ironed out, like almost entirely ironed out. Like where there had once been this sort of squishy mass of undifferentiated characters. Now they made the bland white guy a villain and they gave the computer twins this sort of one had a tragedy happen and one is sort of in this awkward espionage thing that actually kind of works. And they're letting Ming-Na be kind of this like awesome badass of few words that like is sort of a trope in Joss Whedon stuff, but I really liked it. And once they moved past the sort of 11 billion episodes of, you know, Coulson's grappling with the secrets of his resurrection and like that was a dud. But once they moved past that, he gets to sort of be the sort of slightly enigmatic father figure to this team. They did. I mean, they did, but it was sort of exactly what you thought, where it was just like he was dead and he was resurrected through methods, basically.
Right.
And the methods were, you know, sort of Promethean, I guess, and sort of just like, what, you know, is the the price we pay too much? And,
they used the MacGuffatron.
Yeah, basically. And at some point, I think they basically just said that. It was just like, well, it happened. And I
shut
think
up,
with,
that's why.
Yes. Yeah. I think at some point they realized that they weren't going to be able to settle it in a way that was going to be hugely satisfying.
Yeah.
And by that point, they had other balls in the air that were really more interesting. So they decided to go
with that.
I kind
of respect that.
Yeah.
Yeah. That if it's sort of like sometimes no explanation or it just happened is a better explanation. It doesn't invite you to question all the rules.
Especially if it's en route to something that you are interested in talking about. And I think the way that the Captain America twist sort of gave this S.H.I.E.L.D. Hydra dynamic, now it feels like the show has something to do, where they have this mission that isn't entirely just like, oh, this is the busy work that they're doing while the real superheroes are off waiting for the next movie. Like, it feels like there's enough on the Marvel plate that what they're doing matters. They have sort of well-drawn, or at least like identifiable villains, and there's a structure within sort of, you know, S.H.I.E.L.D. and Hydra and who they're going after, and I don't know. I feel, and I'm not here to strong arm anybody, dear listeners, into watching it again. But if it's something where you went back at towards the end of last season, saw it again, and you were just like, this is still garbage, then don't watch it. Like, but if you went in at the end of last season, was like, I'm intrigued, maybe a little bit. Like, I feel like the beginning of the season has been very strong, and maybe give it a shot. And I need someone to watch it with. Please, somebody.
Yeah. We'll put Joe's home address and pen pal connections in the show notes for you to talk about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. All right, everybody, get ready.
Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it.
I think that was the best yet.
That was the best yet, for sure.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Joe. This is just a quick note because fucking CBS renewed Under the Dome. It was on the bubble all summer, as far as I knew. I was hoping they would get to the end and be like, oh, they're all going home. Great. Let's let them and not ever have to look at them again. No, there's going to be a third season. I'm furious.
I'm so excited.
All right, everybody. It is time for the canon. And Joe has something for us. Take it away, Joe.
So if you follow me on Twitter, you know I took my last canon defeat pretty hard. I tried with the comeback. I really did. And then very Valerie Cherish-like, I was...
But Joe, you single-handedly made the comeback come back, so congratulations on that.
That's true, so you're welcome for that as well. But I agonized over this pick, and I wanted success, but I also didn't want to pander. Let's be honest. I did not want to just go to something that I knew would get in. I have too much respect for you three and also the listeners.
Cut to list of Joe's crossed off Simpsons episodes.
Yes, it's totally true. I was like the pretzel one. No. Alas. Uh-huh. And I wasn't going to go back to the West Wing well, even though I could have. I really could have. No, I'm going with... a show that has never been, I don't think, right? Has never been presented for the canon. And it feels like in its sixth season, it's time. So I'm with The Good Wife. This episode is from season 4, episode 14, titled Red Team, Blue Team. So just to give you a little sense of like where this comes in the chronology, previous to this, we went through several weeks, I think, of Lockhart Gardner being in financial trouble. And I think this is when they brought in Nathan Lane to like cut the overhead and get him, you know, in shape and whatever. And then I think just previous to this episode, they finally landed the Chum Hum account, Chum Hum being fake Google. And now, at the very beginning of the episode, you get sort of an uncharacteristically giddy David Lee, which is a really interesting version of David Lee to see. Seeing him smile is both, like, pleasing and disturbing at once. So it's David Lee, and then this, like, regally triumphant Diane Lockhart, which is great to see. And they inform the partners that they are now $133 million in the black because of cost-cutting measures and landing these big clients. So also previous to this episode, one of the gambits that the partners had taken to raise money had been to offer partnership to the fourth-year associates, which for our purposes means Alicia and Carrie. Now that the partners don't need the added revenue, though, a very characteristically bastard-like David Lee moves that these offers be rescinded. So Alicia and Carrie don't know this yet. And they are approached by Diane and Will. And I think at this point, Will doesn't even know about this. So Diane and Will approach them for help on a case. They're representing the makers of a fake energy drink, blah, 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 who are being sued for the death of a teenage girl. And they need Alicia and Carrie to take part in a mock trial, a kind of war games scenario where the client can see how a court case might play out and whether they should settle. So Alicia and Carrie would play opposing counsel to Will and Diane, and Alicia feels like, and sort of rightly feels like, this sounds like a lot of fun. And everybody's in sort of great lighthearted spirits. What could possibly go wrong? I should also point out very early on, like, Alicia and Carrie purchase Kalinda's services, her research services, which I should say today we heard that Archie Punjabi will be leaving The Good Wife at the end of the season. Not coming back. And this particular scene where they hire Kalinda services was the last time that Juliana Margulies and Archie Punjabi shared a scene together.
That's really? Right. Actually, I think it's when she's dropping off the she's like, I don't know what else got into that envelope. Yep. Calf. But yeah, that
two
was the last
seasons
one.
Ago. So wow. Things that make you go, with that one. For sure.
I saw her at the gym.
Which one?
Archie
Punjabi.
Yeah.
My roommate always sees Juliana Margulies at his gym. So. Mm.
We should
and
talk.
They are on separate coasts, so imagine what's going on. So here's probably a good place to knock out the B-plot. Eli Gold has been the target of corruption investigations at this point for a while. He probably didn't do anything too terrible, but in the Fed's defense, he does sort of give off the air of corruption. So Eli has hired the services of effective weirdo Elsbeth Tassione, played by Carrie Preston, to defend him against the DOJ prosecutors who are played by Kyle MacLachlan and Hamish Linklater, who I feel like we all enjoy the both of them.
Yes.
A lot of quirk in this subplot, what with Elsbeth's antics and Kyle MacLachlan acting like a kind of mirror Elsbeth, and he has a crush on her besides. And something about...
And Hamish Linklater plays the accordion.
I was just about to say something about Hamish Linklater playing the accordion. It's so...
Pretty well, too.
Yeah,
I don't think that was a stunt accordion.
I wonder if that's like a thing where he was just like, so here's a weird thing.
they were like, we can use that.
Yeah. Or they went to him and was like, what's the strangest hobby you have? So the accordion. Elsbeth hits a breakthrough in the case when she finds out that the DOJ only got Eli on two dirty phone calls, which is one short of the legal requirement for the charges. So it looks like the case is going to be thrown out, except that Kyle MacLachlan sort of brazenly tears up Elsbeth's documents and doctors the original one right in front of her, and then, like, offers her a biscotti. So she's, in her silly little way, just, like, furious, and she's going to get him. Not to be outdone, she arranges a counter maneuver wherein Eli pretends to agree to wear a wire to get Peter on some worse corruption charges. But instead of going to meet with Peter, he instead goes to meet with Hamish Linklater, and with Elsbeth and Kyle MacLachlan listening on the line, we hear this.
How many dirty calls did you hear me make?
What's he doing?
Getting him on the record.
You can't. You...
What? What can't I?
He also scratched out two and wrote in three.
Yeah, where's your proof?
He ripped up the proof.
Yeah, tough break on that.
Elsbeth, I am very disappointed in you.
But you know, he scratched out two and wrote in.
David LaGuardia, please, hurry.
Do I know that? What does it matter if I know it?
I just want to know. It doesn't matter either way, we don't have proof. It was only two dirty calls.
Come on, pick up.
Hold on 1 second, Mr. Gold.
Elsbeth hangs up.
Hello? Hello?
It was only two dirty calls, wasn't it, David?
Sure. We were one short. Technicality. The law is filled with technicalities.
David LaGuardia.
He's on a wire. He's got you on a wire.
This is Eli Gold. I am in the office of David LaGuardia. He's just admitted that his wiretapping application was insufficient.
Damn it.
His Scottish look, really comes out when he's triumphant.
Yeah, it's true. The look of sort of bold triumph on Elsbeth's face when she hits the phone receiver on that, when she hangs up the call, is brilliant and wonderful. And it makes you love her, I think. So back to the Lockhart-Gardner storyline, where the mock trial is going along with an air of friendly competition. Diane even cracks a joke during Alicia's opening statement, which is like watching an eclipse. So it's all very, you know, haha, like, watch out, we don't beat you too bad. We're going to really try. And the mood changes after David Lee calls Alicia in to have a meeting about the small matter of that partnership offer.
David, how are you?
I'm good. Unfortunately, we have a problem.
Oh, no. We have an opportunity.
Huh? That's right. Every problem is an opportunity. Well, here's the opportunity. We need to delay your partnership for a year.
What a magnificent bastard.
He's great.
I love him.
Zach Cronier does not get enough credit for what he does on that show. He's really fantastic. After confirming with Carrie that the offers were rescinded from all the fourth years, Alicia decides it's game fucking on with this mock trial. So... the tenor of the proceedings get a little different. The objections get testier. The arguments get more personal. And the judge, who in this case is the crotchety old partner played by Tesh from The Sopranos, is generally having none of it.
The only reason you weren't sent an identical warning letter is because you gamed the system, so you were not considered a
objection,
food.
Your Honor. Prejudicial.
How is that prejudicial?
Because you're suggesting that thieves should be judged as a food when it's not a food.
Yes, because they gamed the system.
No, it's about categories. The FDA has concluded thief is not a food.
Wait a minute. The FDA didn't conclude any such
Your
thing.
Honor,
which
hold,
counsel
hold,
is questioning.
Hold, quiet, please. I'm going to side with the defense on this.
What?
I said I'm going to side with the defense on this because your argument is prejudicial.
It is
when
not.
When you sit down, I said his argument is prejudicial.
There is nothing prejudicial about pointing out the hypocrisy of an FDA manipulation.
Why, the two of you, keep yelling like this, you're going to find yourselves in contempt.
What? and end up in mock court jail?
I need a bathroom break.
I think the audio doesn't quite give the full, like, bitch face eye roll that Alicia, like, torques up on that. It was really amazing.
It's really something. So, meanwhile, Alicia and Carrie gather the fourth years together at Alicia's apartment in the presence of her awful children to discuss their options. They decide to meet with all their top-level clients innocuously, though the partners don't need to know it's innocuously, the point being to scare the partners into appreciating them. As it turns out, these meetings do scare the partners, but they retaliate with a divide-and-conquer strategy, offering partnership to only one of the fourth years. Guess who that one is?
The partners had a change of heart. If you still want to be an equity partner, we want you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. We need your capital contribution within the next 24 hours or the offer moves on to someone else.
Wow. You really make a girl feel appreciated.
Were you under the mistaken impression that we were here for your appreciation? Do you want it or not?
I want it.
Good. 24 hours.
Is it all the fourth years?
No, just you. We only had one position. You got it.
Why?
My guess, we think your husband's going to be governor. How's that? Feel appreciated now?
I mean, honestly.
Magnificent bastard.
David Lee. Oh my God. 2016. Love that.
So mean.
So the offer does extinguish the fire from Alicia's belly somewhat, though that comes after the part where she and Will have an after-hours screaming match in her office, punctuated by a passionate kiss, followed by Alicia doing the stupid, stupid, stupid thing as she marches to the elevator. So, you know, that dance continues. As for the mock trial, the energy drink company is cowed into settling with the plaintiffs' victory for Lockhart Gardner, who wanted him, they wanted them to settle in the first place. So, that's mostly the particulars of that case. They're interesting, but they're not really that crucial. The plot of The Good Wife moves pretty fast, which makes it a bit challenging to choose just one episode for an exercise like the canon. In this episode, we go from the firm being profitable to the partnerships being rescinded to Carrie and Alicia broaching the idea of breaking off into their own firm for the first time, which makes this episode something of a landmark in the series' greater arc. Then to Alicia being offered and ultimately accepting the partnership. The last scene is her being with all of the partners together and them sort of toasting her and them sort of her looking outside the meeting room and seeing Carrie on the outside. The kinetic pace is a huge feather in the show's cap, I think, and it's kept the show from getting bogged down in too many ruts. Even if it sort of goes down a bad storyline alley, it's able to get out of it fairly quickly, sometimes not quickly enough, but usually quickly, within a few episodes, let's say. A legal drama usually lives and dies by their cases, which is not necessarily the case with The Good Wife. Rather than presenting crack legal mysteries week after week, The Good Wife instead relies on character dynamics within the firm, in particular the politics of power, which is a huge feature of this episode. The series is also pretty good at presenting interesting little niches within the legal profession, such as the mock trial thing. Two more quick things. The guest casting on this episode, which we talked a little bit about. Carrie Preston, Kyle MacLachlan, Hamish Linkletter, Colm Feore. T.R. Knight shows up as the campaign manager who's the thorn in Eli's side, which is actually something of a light episode guest casting-wise when it comes to this show. It's really, really prodigious with the way it gets to everybody who's within any kind of a radius of New York City at the time. The other thing is the humor, which can sometimes lean a little quirky, as we saw with the accordion and the Elspeth stuff, but I feel like you get a lot of leeway with sort of twee material when they're in the same storyline as Eli, whose bluster sort of acts as a nice counterbalance. Even in the so-called serious storyline with the mock trial, though, we still get stuff like the woman that Alicia and Carrie hire to portray the victim's
grandmother.
Here's a clip of her on the witness stand after having been specifically instructed by Alicia and Carrie to not go too big.
And Bella was your only grandchild.
I'm sorry. I miss her so much. Yes, she's my only one. My heart is missing a piece of itself. I cry into the night. Where are you, my Bella? Oh, Lord, why? Why is she gone from my arms?
I see. And you're the one who discovered her body.
Yes, it was me. I held her close to me, so close. And she felt cold. Cold as the grave. Cold as the night. Please, baby. Please don't go. Please, Lord, don't take her. Oh, sweet Heavenly Father.
I love how she develops an accent like in the middle of this testimony. And the editing on this is also so good. Like, they cut it in the middle of her lamenting, which is a hallmark of the show. It's very well edited.
And what I also love is they keep cutting to Carrie, who is getting the giving the most subtle, like, pump the brakes motion without actually trying to, like, let on. It's fantastic. So with that, I'm going to hand the episode over to you fine people.
Sarah, why don't you start?
Well, this is a sort of fantastic canon exemplar because, you know, we're always debating, like, are we voting based on whether it's, you know, on the quality or whether it's typical of the show or both? And I think that this episode has both. It's everything that The Good Wife does well, except that little Willisha in there. But it's like, I'm that one who was like, wait, they killed him for real? He's dead? Sweet. Because I was like, done with that character and also with their love dyad or whatever the hell. So I think they did it pretty well for a while, and then it was getting really tired and they killed them off. So that reminded me of the way the show, like, does seem to have an ear mostly for, like, if this isn't working, we're going to tweak it.
For sure.
This is, like, some of the best, like, recurring characters, like David Lee and sort of semi-senile, and what's the character's name? Harvey? Barney?
Hesh's character?
Yeah, I just always call him Counselor Hesh, but I have no idea what his character's name.
I can't either. I'll think of it.
It's like super smug Victory Dance Eli, who is my favorite, accompanied by spluttering, enraged Eli, my second favorite.
Yeah.
I love Elspeth.
Yeah.
It showcases how the show really knows, like, exactly how much quirk is enough and how much of some of these characters is enough, like, just when you're starting to think they would be relying too heavily on someone like Plimpton or Lewis Canning, they would pull back or, like, cycle them out. And the show is really good at, like, explaining legal issues and, like, writing and editing courtroom scenes. And this is a really deft excuse to get characters, like, main characters who are ostensibly all on the same side in an adversarial courtroom situation against each other. So that was cool. It was a little bit funny. It's, you know, the end of Kalinda and Alicia's in-person relationship.
Yeah, it's historical.
I thought this was great. It was, like, great fun to revisit, but also it's a good, like, if you're trying to, like, find that one episode that's like, this is why you should watch the show, this is a good one for that. Tara, what did you think?
Yeah, I really like this episode, and for all the reasons you said, but also the turn early on when Alicia and Carrie find out that they're not going to be partners and how much more ugly their arguments in mock court get is great, because often I feel like Alicia is the most boring character on the show, and the exception is when she gets fucking pissed and scorches the earth. And the episode that just aired on Sunday this week was another good example of that, where she was at this point in the show, season six, she's exploring the possibility of running for state's attorney, and so she was kind of getting a preview of what that process would be like in terms of looking at the Apple research on herself. And, like, she gets this great line where she was like, I never want to introduce my kids to who I'm sleeping with. They might be late for their abortions. Like,
wasn't that amazing?
So good.
Yes.
So this is another example of Alicia being like, fuck everything, I'm just gonna scorch the earth now. And and the moment when Diane and Will realize that Carrie and Alicia are not fucking around in this trial, and that they really are going for the jugular, to the point where their client is actually like, are you trying to lose on purpose? Because Will and Diane just seem so overmatched by these people that are supposed to be their subordinates. So that part of it was super fun. It really, as you say, Sarah, gives it a new dimension, putting the characters in an interesting position in terms of actual legal stuff. And I can't be mad at any episode that includes Elsbeth, who is the kind of character that on any other show, like if you just turned the dial on her like a notch,
yes,
it would be too much. I don't know how they do it, but she's exactly the right level of like quirky and weird that it works and it doesn't feel cloying. Including the Vera Bradley bag, which I would not forgive on any other person. But for some reason, I'll allow it with Elsbeth because she is great. So yeah,
they have a lot of pockets in them. Could you maybe forgive it from two people asking for a friend?
And I know she won the Emmy this year, and it must have been
It wasn't for this episode. It was really? For the one with the Olympics.
Oh,
I remember.
Wow.
I only remember that because I looked it up when I wrote a Characters We Love post on the site about
interesting
her last season.
Yeah. Okay.
But I mean, I'm sure they take it all into consideration. But that was not the submission episode. But yeah, it's great. It's super fun, and especially looking back on where things went from here, the turning point aspect of it is great because you don't realize at this moment exactly how pivotal it actually is going to turn
exactly.
out to be. So that makes it. Interesting retrospect. Dave.
So I only started watching with what I think you're referring to, which is sort of their, what they call their Red Wedding episode. Is that the end of the season?
It was like a third of the way through season five. Dave, The first one I watched with Dave, because we got a screener for it, was the one where Lockhart Gardner discovers that Alicia and Carrie are going out on their own, which is another great one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was great. I was sold on the show then. So what happened to...
That's how you make phone calls interesting.
Yeah, totally.
If you think about how hard that is to do. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, sorry to interrupt, Dave.
No, so I mean, so for me, this is sort of going back. It's sort of like watching a history show, you know? Like, I hadn't seen it before. I only knew, you know, it from, you know, 2013 or whatever, and we're going back a bit. So it was interesting in that way. Boy, I wish they could get Kyle MacLachlan back somehow.
Yeah,
I really enjoyed his character. And I have a theory, which is after this sort of setback, he becomes the mayor of Portland in Portlandia because his character is very similar, except he's a little bit more demented in Portlandia. So I think maybe this experience kind of tweaked him just enough to send him off the edge.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoy that pet theory. What also have we seen... what's her name? Elsbeth?
This was not her first appearance.
No, but have we seen her since I started watching?
Yes.
Okay.
She was in an episode where she got accosted by a Times Square costume
character.
Oh,
that's right. That's right. Yeah. She's a great character, and you're right. What I think makes her real is that, I mean, thankfully you don't have much reason to talk to lawyers, but when you get that one that's really approachable, but then, like, through the process at some point, he bears you know, their knives.
Oh,
and you're like, oh, okay.
Yep.
Thank God you're on my side. That part of her character rings true to me.
Because
when you get a really good lawyer on your side who is out for blood and knows exactly surgically when to do it, it's like such a great feeling. And that's kind of what she brings to the show, is sort of
There's a moment where Eli sort of looks at her and he smiles really big and he's like, Elsbeth, like, you make me happier whenever you show up. And it's just like, it's so true.
Yeah, it is. And I don't really have much to add about the show beyond that. I mean, I think everything you said is right. This kind of feels like, you know, the show as a whole kind of takes part of what L.A. Law was doing and sort of updates it, you know, as far as changing the mix of courtroom, you know, shenanigans versus office politics. And when you work for yourself at home, which everybody here on this podcast does, I have to tell you, one thing you miss from the workplace is workplace gossip and workplace hierarchy and, you know, who's the kingmaker and who's going to be out and all that kind of stuff.
Dave, don't worry, Sarah and I talk behind your back all the time.
And so I enjoyed that part of it. Once in a while I kind of have this weird wistfulness for working in an office just for that reason, you know, just for like, oh, I hope that guy gets fired.
And he did. Yeah.
And I really love the show's balance of sinners and saints and, you know, and bastards like David Lee. He's great.
Yes.
He's one of the best. And I think this episode is very representative of all the show offers. So I say good choice. And I'm going to say yes. Tara?
Yes.
Sarah?
Yes.
Yay.
The Good Wife, Season 4, Episode 14, Red Team, Blue Team. You are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Gray Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It's time for Winner and Losers of the Week. Sarah, you have our winner.
I do. In keeping with our sportsy theme, I'm declaring the NFL a winner for once.
How?
Because someone cast Luke Wilson as Commissioner Roger Goodell, which is better casting than the man deserves. But I'll watch it because Luke Wilson is still pretty foxy.
For in what? In what project?
It's just a movie about the NFL.
Oh, like for HBO or something?
Yeah, it's a TV movie.
All right.
Can I insert a sub-winner here?
Showtime, maybe? Yeah, sure.
Oh, okay.
Sub-winner of the week is ISIS, the terrorist organization, for having make Archer change their opening credits and do a little thing in their season 5 opener that dispenses with the name. And just waiting for the other shoe to drop on Downton Abbey, where they have to change the dog's name, who's also ISIS. Yeah. And if I may make a suggestion, that dog's new name should be Imhotep. Tara, who's our loser?
Well, I mean, I have a minor loser, and then Sarah's got another bigger loser, okay. But I'll do mine first. Phil Robertson of Duck Dynasty feels like old news now, but he apparently gave another interview where he said you can't get AIDS from straight sex. Sarah!
Beats the kind of sex Stephen Collins has been trying to have.
Oh, shit!
No! No, sweet heavenly father.
Yes.
Happy is not happy.
A bad toucher. I assume everyone has heard by now or already scrubbed from their brains with lies. The fact that during it, some proceeding that, I'll get it, that his...
Stephen Collins lawyer.
Stop talking about me.
With a slander blueback document there. Cease and desist. He, in some proceeding that his estranged wife taped during their therapy or something, which she was allowed to do. I'm not sure why, but there was some exemption that she got for this, that he admitted exposing himself to children and putting a hand, small hand, where it didn't belong. And
talk about your tales of the gold monkey.
Oh, Dave.
What?
Yeah, he also got, he was supposed to be in an episode of Scandal this season reprising a character that I guess he had already played in season 2, but like shortly after this, a message was scrambled to be like, yeah, we're cutting all those scenes, bye.
And the Gospel Network that was showing Seventh Heaven reruns every day, scrapped them for the nanny. I just keep flashing back to that gross SVU episode where he and his, he was like boning his son's wife or something like that, and then killed her. She was legal though,
but still,
so that was different.
I have a question for you.
Yes.
Do you know what time it is?
Yes.
Time to stop watching Seventh Heaven.
It's game time.
Oh,
that's much better. Yes.
What?
Oh no!
Oh shit!
Hello! It is I, Dracula, Prince of Darkness. This is the sixth game time of the season. Tara, you're in first place with 3 points.
Woo.
Valued guests, right behind, with 2. Sarah, you only have 1 point. Blah! Today we are playing Monster Mash from Jacob from Australia, who earns himself an extra credit. One moment. Oh, there we go. Redeemable for an extra hot great topic of his choosing. Today we are playing a Halloween game time that will test your knowledge of Halloween costumes on TV.
Oh.
I will read you descriptions of three Halloween costumes from a single episode of a TV show. Very interesting. You tell me the show for 1 point. Costumes may have appeared on major or minor characters, but they all have speaking parts. No backroom costumes here. We have 36 questions and a tiebreaker. Are we ready to see who goes first?
Yeah.
Yes.
We will start with Joe.
Okay, Joe, then Sarah, then Tara. Are we ready to play Monster Mash?
Dracula, yes. are you here with us for the whole rest of game time?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Here we go, Joe.
Yes.
Your 3 costumes are a pumpkin, a clown witch, and Tina Turner. What's the show?
A clown witch?
Clown / witch.
Meaning a clown and a witch, or a clown sandwich? I'm just trying to be sure. Because if you had a sandwich with, like, you would call
Please,
it a clown witch.
No, gross.
Clown slash witch. That's all the info I have.
Okay. My cafeteria served clown witch at one point. It's just like, anyway.
So wrong.
Tina Turner, I feel like, is the, linchpin here. Community?
Yes.
The Cosby Show.
Ah.
All right.
Sarah.
Meg White. Alex DeLarge. Richard Nixon. What's the TV show?
New Girl?
Veronica Mars.
Another good guess.
Dara.
Yeah.
1 minute. I'm going to bring Dave in. Dave, come here.
Yeah.
Yeah? Take over. Jara. Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Edward Scissorhands.
Yep.
Mommy Mummy. Mm-hmm. Rapper, actress, Queen Latifah from her UNITY phase. Unity phase.
Oh, Bob's Burgers.
That's good for 1 point. All right, back to Joe. Yes. Spider-Man, Young Mother Teresa, and Bruja. I'm going to say B-R-U-J-A.
It's probably Bruja.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Like.
See?
Witch in Mexico or something. Okay. Don't quote me on that. I could be entirely wrong. What are the other two?
Spider-Man, Young Mother Teresa, Brujaja.
The OC?
Modern Family. Modern Family. All right, Sarah.
Yep.
Frank N. Furter, Rocky, and Eddie.
And Eddie, Freaks and Geeks,
Glee. That's Glee. Mm. Tara, the Mad Hatter, a cowboy, Ponce de Leon.
The Mad Hatter, a cowboy, Ponce de Leon.
Ponce.
9 or 2 1 up.
Cheers. Oh. All right. I have a joke. Why don't witches like to ride their brooms while they're angry?
Why?
Because they're afraid of flying off the handle. All right, Joe.
Yes.
Batman, Zorro, and a kitty. Batman, Zorro, and a kitty. Batman, Zorro, kitty.
I might guess Community again.
That 70s show.
I like that guess, though.
Yeah. Sarah.
Yep.
A cat. Robin. Crappy Batman.
Crappy Batman.
Crappy Batman.
I feel like
yeah.
I know this one. Shit. Crappy Batman. Oh, no. You know what? I'm actually thinking of actual people that I knew in college. shit. Community.
Raising hope. All right, Tara. Mm-hmm. Mayor McCheese, a skeleton, and Albert Einstein.
Mayor McCheese?
All three costumes appeared in one episode of this show.
Jeez.
Mayor McCheese, a skeleton, Albert Einstein.
New Girl?
Pardon me?
New Girl?
The Simpsons. The Simpsons. All right, back to Joe.
Yes.
Sherlock Holmes. Chaucer and Cyrano de Bergerac.
Well,
Cyrano.
Some show's getting awfully fucking literary with that.
Yes, that might
Halloween
be a clue.
Costumes. Jesus. Okay. I have a feeling this is one of those, like, a procedural decides to grow a sense of humor kind of thing. Bones?
Frasier.
Of course.
All right, Sarah. Snow elf, Marilyn Monroe, and a Klingon.
What was the first one?
A snow elf. You know, an elf from snowy lands. A snow
right.
elf. And I want to give you another clue, but I can't. But I want to.
Big Bang Theory.
That's what I was going to say.
Good guess. Same network. All these costumes are worn navally.
Oh,
NCIS.
Joe was one question too early.
Yeah.
Oh.
All right. This is a tough game, guys. Tara. Yeah.
We have 1 point on the board.
Raggedy Ann.
Yeah.
T-Pain, a pirate.
T-Pain.
Raggedy Ann. T-Pain.
Is this Parks and Recreation?
That's good for 1 point.
Nice.
I have another joke. Mm. Why wasn't there any food left after the monster party?
Why?
Because everyone was a goblin.
Get out.
A cat. 1960s girl. Brian Cackrow.
Krakow.
Mindy Project.
Sorry.
My So-Called Life.
Wait.
Ricky goes as Brian.
I don't remember that.
Yeah. I think it's
Danielle
Ricky,
goes
right?
As Angela.
Right.
All right, sure.
Oh, like, I remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do remember that. I don't remember Ricky going as Brian. Damn it.
Maybe it's not Ricky, but someone does.
Prepare to end your complaining, Bunty.
Bunty?
Yeah.
Okay.
Catwoman. Bride of Frankenstein. Pink Power Ranger.
Thank you, Felicity.
Nice.
Frodo. Yeah. Thor, the Doppler effect.
Is this the Big Bang Theory?
Whoops, yes it is. Of course it is. All right, back to Joe.
Yes.
Barbie, Daphne, Noah Werner. Barbie, Daphne, Noah Werner. What's the show?
I don't know who Noah Werner is. Barbie and Daphne. Scrubs.
Suburgatory.
I don't know.
All right, number 17.
It's pretty good.
Bonnie, Zorro, and a mermaid.
Bonnie?
Yeah.
Oh, this one is 90210.
Yeah, it is.
Good for 1 point. All right,
another
Tara.
Classic Donna stupid costume. Yes.
A soldier.
Yep.
A noble woman. A punk rocker ghost.
Is this Buffy?
It is. Yeah. I have one more joke for you.
Oh, good.
Why do mummies make excellent spies?
I don't know.
Why?
Because they're good at keeping things under wraps.
Get out.
All right, Joe.
Yeah.
A princess. Windy guy. Lori Keller. Princess, Lori. Windy guy, Lori Keller.
Lori Keller. Oh, Cougar Town.
That is good for a point.
I knew Lori Keller.
All right.
Yeah, you do.
Back to Sarah.
Yep.
The Crow, Schoolgirl, Steve Irwin. I think the last one's a pretty good hint in the realm of bad taste. The Crow, Schoolgirl, Steve Irwin. And this is post-Steve Irwin's demise.
The League?
South Park.
South Park. I was thinking It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia when you said
that. Yeah,
that
would have been my second choice.
All right, so this is to Tara.
Yep.
Catwoman, Supergirl, Spudnik. Catwoman, Supergirl, and Spudnik.
Damn. Oh, Friends!
Good for a point. All right, back to Joe.
Yes.
Groucho Marx, Gort, Jamie Summers, Bionic Woman.
Freaks and Geeks.
That's good for a point.
Yay.
All right,
Jamie Summers is so good.
To Sarah. Joey Ramone A. Quimby.
Joey Ramona Quimby, probably.
Okay.
Yeah.
David Letterman. A public serpent. 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 Joey Ramona Quimby. Mm-hmm. David Letterman.
Yep.
A public serpent. What's the show, Sarah?
Family Guy.
That's New Girl. That was New Girl.
Yeah.
All right, so we're on to Tara.
Yeah.
Here's our last question before our score break.
Okay.
Austin Powers. Marilyn Monroe, making her second appearance in this quiz. Mother and Baby.
Happy endings?
That is good for 1 point. All right. Time for another joke. Why couldn't Dracula's wife get to sleep?
Why?
Because of my coffin. What's the scores, please, Tara?
Joe and Sarah are tied with 2. I have 6.
Oh, boy. All right. So we're back to Joe.
Yep.
Yes. A woman, little devil, one of those dead guys from Field of Dreams.
The first one you said was a woman?
A woman, little devil, and finally, one of those dead guys from Field of Dreams.
Uh-huh.
I bet Tara knows this one.
It does feel familiar.
Okay. I don't know, so I'm gonna guess Futurama.
The other one, News Radio.
News Radio, right? Yep.
All right,
so we're to Sarah.
Yep.
A Mountie, Hanging Chad, Slutty Pumpkin.
I feel like I know this.
I snorted.
Hanging Chad, especially. Sort of a giveaway.
And so is Mountie. Mountie's a good clue.
I don't know. Benson.
Not Benson. It's How I Met Your Mother.
Yeah,
How I Met Your Mother. Okay, Tara.
Yep.
Eddie Murphy, Batman, and Beastmaster.
Is this Scrubs?
It's Community, right?
Yeah, it's Community.
Ah, shit.
Yeah. All right. So to Joe.
Yes.
A witch, uh-huh. A dismembered stewardess, a guy with an axe in his head.
You know this one, Joe.
Yeah, you should know this
one. You definitely know it.
Tell you who knows this one a lot. Mark Blankenship. Mm-hmm. Intimately.
I don't know if he knows it better than Joe.
You didn't have to. For the record, I got it instantly before Dave said intimately. This is one of the Roseannes.
Yeah.
That is correct. That's a good 4 point.
I was expecting a different Roseanne, but yes.
All right, Sarah. I think you watched this show, but I'm not sure. A Skeleton, Mario Batali, Royal Baby.
A Skeleton, Mario Batali, Royal Baby?
Mm-hmm.
Is this the Mindy Project?
This is Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Oh. Yeah.
All right, Tara.
Yeah.
Diane from Cheers, Dirty Harry Potter, and a urinal.
Urinal?
Yep.
Oh, God. Is this It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia?
This is the Mindy Project.
Damn it.
Folks!
Who won the Skeleton Beauty Contest? This is good for one Dave-Dracula point, if you could answer.
Who won the Skeleton
Beauty Contest?
Boney?
Nobody.
Oh, my God.
No.
All right, Joe.
Boy.
I'm calling the police.
Didn't you say that was the last one?
Nope. I said that was
Dick.
Sith Lord. Uh-huh. Sith Lord. Man with 2 heads. 3-hole punch gym. 3-hole punch gym, the last one.
I refuse to be left at the platform when the Scrubs train pulls away, so I'm going to say Scrubs again.
3-hole punch gym was a good hint. That was The Office.
Oh, God damn it, you're right.
All right, here's your second to last question, Sarah. Okay. Marilyn Monroe for the hat trick in this game. A cheerleader, a 1920s flapper. Marilyn Monroe, cheerleader, 20s flapper girl.
Marilyn Monroe, Friends.
Desperate housewives.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, all right, Tara, here's your second to last.
Uh-huh.
A goblin.
Right.
Great at parties.
Mm-hmm.
A fairy. Frederick Douglass. Goblin, a fairy, and Frederick Douglass walk into a Halloween episode. From what show?
Oh, God. Is this New Girl also somehow?
No
repeats?
I don't think there's a repeat. Okay. That was Louie. Louie.
Okay.
All right. So last question, Joe.
Yes.
A nature witch, Glenda the Good Witch, Elvira, Mistress of the Dark.
Oh, dear.
Think about it.
Yeah.
Charmed.
Attaboy.
All right. Sarah, a skeleton, a golfer, Al Borland.
Al Borland. Shit.
A skeleton, a golfer, and Al Borland. Is Al Married Borland a good children. Hint?
Is it Home Improvement?
It is Home Improvement.
Ew.
Yeah. I was going to say, if I'm right, it's a show we were just talking
another
about yesterday.
Another company in the cavalcade of bullshit that is that show.
And
Christ.
Last question for Tara. Wonder Woman.
Right.
A squint. The back half of a cow. Kind of want to see this now.
A squint?
A squint, yeah.
What
do you think?
Undeclared?
That's bones. That's bones.
Ah, that's bones!
That's bones. All right, everybody. Sorry, so Joe. Let's get our final scores. But first, what does a ghost eat for lunch?
What?
A bologna sandwich.
Sarah has
the
Sarah has 2, Joe has 4, I have 6.
All right, so let's do our shits and giggles tiebreaker, shall we?
Yeah.
Get it out of the way. All right, first person to shout it out wins, let's say 3 day points because there's 3 clues.
Okay.
Ooh.
You can shout out as much as you want whenever you want. A ghost, a witch.
Simpsons.
Ghost, a witch, and a World War I flying ace.
Oh, Charlie Brown's Halloween?
Yeah.
It's the Great Pumpkin,
yeah.
Charlie Brown?
That's right, yeah. 3 day points for you, Tara. Congratulations.
Tara!
All right, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. Ladies and gentlemen, kids of all ages, gathered around to hear us discuss whether or not American Horror Story Freak Show is the greatest show on earth before we went around the dial with stops at Extreme Cheapskates, postseason baseball commentary,
draft
stuff, HBO, and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. We discovered there's going to be a whole new batch of reasons why we are all Domer coming at us next year, and Joe won his case for the canonization of the Good Wife's Red Team, Blue Team. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Tara was the winner of this week's spooky Halloween game time. Remember?
We're listening.
I am David T. Cole on behalf of Tara Ariano.
Thanks for satisfying me sexually, Lobster Boy.
Sarah D. Bunting.
But do you get egg roll?
Dracula, the Prince of Darkness. Buy low, sell high. And Joe Reed.
Cold as the grave.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Grape.
Oh, no, my darling. You are confused. You liked it here with us. No. No. You loved it.
Poor acting! Sweet Heavenly Father!
Ha